Welcome to London Runway Style. Each episode, we look at a feature you can find in our pages or conduct an interview with a notable person in fashion. This week, we're talking to Jeff Garner. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And could you introduce yourself for our listeners, please?
Yes, I'm Jeff Garner, designer of Prophetic. I have been doing sustainable fashion for about 22 years now.
Wow. So well ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. It's funny to call it a curve. Yeah, when I got into it, everyone looked at me like I was crazy for asking for hemp fabrications and doing dyes by plants. So, it was an interesting time.
Was it important to you right from the beginning?
Sure, I grew up in Tennessee on the horse farm. It was just a natural, kind of thinking for me because, I grew up with land and the thought of, creating something, beautiful and new that was toxic in its production just didn't register, because we're very careful, like for example, what you do with manure from horses and what you plant and what affects the soil, and it's just kind of yeah. So when I got into it, I started with my buddies who were all in bands out of Nashville, and they wanted me to and stage clothing and print band t-shirts, and that printing process, the Plastisol inks, is really, really gnarly. And that was kind of the first sign of the times, because it was like, wow, these people working in the print shops were, they all had acne around their mouths and on their, it just weren't healthy. They were having health problems and they weren't wearing masks. And I was like, guys, are you not, you gotta at least open your bay doors or window. It was just, it's really, it wasn't something talked about, or the thinking wasn't there. So that kind of really got me going just naturally. And so I started challenging the status quo and asking questions and, working with an ink company out of Atlanta called Wheelflex to develop an organic pigment ink. And, so it started early on just trying to problem solve.
And has that got easier as time has gone on? Are there more, I guess, parts of the process that are already getting set up to be sustainable?
Yeah, it's an interesting time. So, it's more on people's ears. So definitely people now understand it. So I don't get the shock value anymore. But in a weird way, it's actually a little bit harder because now you have a lot of greenwashing going on. So people are doing these, what they call bio-based, textiles, and you're like, well, what is it actually made of? So now to get ingredients is almost impossible because they're masking it under, the terminology of like, oh, it's a trade secret and blah blah blah. So basically, it's still laboratory produce, and you want to know, okay, what is the chemical process of making this fabric? I get it's a wood pulp, but how do you process? How do you get that from bamboo, or how do you get that from a tree bark? And and so that's the hardship. Before, it was very kind of black and white. This is hemp, this is organic cotton, this is flax, this is seaweed, and this is the processing, and here's all the synthetic stuff. So yeah, it's an interesting time. It's kind of like I see it as like people are trying to do hybrids versus doing electric versus gas cars. So it's like, okay, well, what if you want the electric? What if you want no toxicity? What if you want, take all the synthetics out of it? Like, how do you gauge that? How do you know? And as designers, as a designer, it's still hard because, they'll kind of, they won't give you all the facts, and so you really have to be like still investigative and try to figure this stuff out. So because I feel as a designer, I do not want to make or design anything that could be potentially harmful to a person who buys it and wears it. So that's my responsibility.
Are there ways, do you think, that consumers can tell the difference as well when they're buying products?
I think it's really, I mean, obviously consumers are getting very well educated. They're hearing things, but sometimes I don't know where they get their information from because I hear things all the time and whatnot. And I'm just like, I do think it's, there's definitely not a, a factual, hey, here's how you diagnose it. There's no tool there yet. But, like our, grandparents could feel and touch a fabric and know if there's any additive in it. It could be organic cotton, but they'll do an additive on top of it to keep it bacteria from growing on it, and or, you know, like everyone's hearing about the PFABs and, you know, the fire retardant. So it's hard to decipher it unless you really have that sensibility with touch or smell, or you could do a burn test. So I think it's almost impossible. And the labeling systems aren't regulated. So for example, I could jacket today, say it's 100% cashmere, yet it could be mixed with acrylic 10% and nobody's going to know, because that's a cheaper fabric when you combine it, right? Versus 100% cashmere. So I know so many companies are doing it. I see it in the marketplaces all the time. And that's unfortunate. So you can't even trust the labels.
Yeah. Yeah, that is unfortunate. I think it's kind of interesting what you say about, you know, generations before could easily tell because they knew this stuff. I think your background speaks to that a little bit as well, you know. And I love the fact that you carry your background through it. Like in your shows, you have live horses very often.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, I am by a trade, you know, I'm a horse trainer. I do natural horsemanship. You know, they've always been with me my entire journey. But I bring them to the shows just to create some groundedness, you know. I think so fickle and, you know, it's a lot of hype and a lot of smoke and mirrors. So I love that grounding. And when people see a horse, like seeing a, you know, a service animal in an airport or in a hospital, it just really connects and says, okay, this is real, this is authentic, you know. And so that's what I love.
Right.
But this time was different. The one show we did in September in London at Burlington Arcade, I haven't really spoken about this. So my original vision was I was gonna basically kind of, you know, the collection was called Let Them Be Naked. So that's the name of our documentary we're working on. So the idea is that, you know, it's better to be nude than dressed in synthetics. Okay, so I had this whole vision idea of having, you know, like a Lady Godiva, like, you know, walking down Burlington Arcade, or, you know, obviously wearing a nude underwear, but with the hair covering the breasts and just kind of creating that visual of, which was a rebellion at that time to say, hey, you know, there's something wrong here. So it basically, I went to test the horse out first, and I jumped on in my hemp boxers, and, you know, I was about to ride it in Burlington Arcade, and they call them the Beatles, you know, that kind of protect Burlington Arcade, you know, since the original time. The guy up front wasn't given the approval that I was allowed to bring the horse through. So he stopped me at the gate, and the Tennessee boy in me was like, oh, I can easily jump him. And I did think about it, and everyone who knows me saw that twinkle in my eye, and I was like, ah, but then they might get upset and then shut down the show. So I didn't do it, but it was kind of funny, but it kind of, in a strange way, worked for the doc, because I kind of got refused to come in, which is, you know, there's so much, and if you're trying to do something right, I think you run against, you know, antagonism all the time. And I always see that as a positive, because that means you're on the right path. So anyways, it was kind of funny. And so we just placed the model on the horse in the gown and kind of set the show off, you know, but it was kind of funny.
Well, I got to hear more about this documentary now, because it sounds very interesting.
Yeah, so I'm full in. It's funny. I've never owned a television and watched TV. So I'm always a book person and just a do person. I love being outdoors and in nature all the time. So honestly, editing with my editors every day is a little taxing. My eyes are, I had to get those blue glasses or whatever, because I'm looking at it. Very interesting. So, but the doc is a passion project, a lifetime. It's my lifetime work. You know, I've been doing this 22 years, trying to spread the message, trying to bring, you know, like with everyone trying to do something good, they're trying to bring awareness. But I realized very early on, you know, I've you know, whether you know me or not, I've shown in Paris Fashion Week and was named Emerging Designer of the Year. I've shown in London for years. I've done Shanghai Fashion Week. And you'd think like I would get some traction, but it's all about timing. You know, it's all about are people wanting to listen to it? And are they just seeing a beautiful dress or a great, you know, collection and not really paying attention to the fabrics and the dyes and the messaging behind it? Yeah. And that's what I've learned. So despite the beautiful shows and the articles and the press, I realized early on, I was like, okay, the real platform for change and shifting consciousness is going to be a documentary platform, because that gives, you know, it bursts this vision and gets it into houses around the world. And I, you know, me, I'm not on, I don't know streamers and all that stuff. So I realized like everyone typically does this at night, and they, you know, and if you want to learn something, you watch docs versus being entertained by film or TV series. So I was like, okay. So basically I went to some friends that are in the industry and asked them and said, hey, this is my vision. It's what I want to do. And they said, yeah, we'll, you know, we'll do this with you. And, you know, I had no budget for it. And, they basically said, hey, we'll help you make this, you know, teaser and trailer. And so we did that last year during Oscars, and it turned out really well, and I just started presenting it to a few friends that are in the industry, because I've been doing some design for TV film, and I have actor buddy dressing. A lot of the guys wear my hemp boxers, which is great. So I just kind of touched base with them, and anyways, so long story short, simply it got fully financed and greenlit within the week, and
wow,
which everyone tells me is unheard of. And then off and running, and I literally left 2 weeks later to go film, and they're like, "That's unheard of." But I'm such a, I guess, just doing catwalk shows. I produce all my catwalk shows. I'm not one of those designers who sit back and let somebody else do it. I just see it as a vision, and I see as a visionary, I need to carry it through. So from my designs to the collection being shown, and I even pick out the music, I compose music. Like I just think that's part of my responsibility. So anyway, so we took off, we traveled the world, to the disruptors in the industry, to the people that are creating solutions, to the textile dirtiness, which a lot of people have seen, the manufacturing side, but you know, we're really focused in and on, you know, basically bring into light that these chemicals that are made in laboratories do affect your health. Mm-hmm. And that's something that really hasn't been spoken about in depth. And, you know, people don't really connect the two. So like Food Inc. did for the food industry, is my hope for Let Them Be Naked. I think it will hopefully bring to home the idea that what we wear every day seeps into our skin and does have a health effect. So that's my goal in it. And so I'm looking forward to releasing it, which we're slated to release in the fall, and taking it out to this, they call it the Summer Shed Fest, but basically to the summer film festivals. So yeah.
That sounds absolutely incredible. I can't wait to see it.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
So tell me a little bit about, because looking back over your collections over the years, you have a really strong brand aesthetic. How would you describe that yourself?
Yeah, I, again, when I entered in fashion, I didn't, you know, nobody, I had internships. I worked for a couple brands, well-known brands, and then I learned how to sew for my grandmother, and yeah. I knew fabrications from just living on the farm and going to the Amish country and pulling fabrics. And anyways, I just I never did the whole, I went to university at Pepperdine and learned my weaknesses, which were business and speaking, actually communication. But I just had this natural gift, I think, for being a seen visions, and I get a lot of stuff in my dreams, and I just visually make it. Mm-hmm. I've very been hands-on. I'm a mechanical. My grandfather was a main scientist in Manhattan Project in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. He was the first chemist they actually hired on for that project, and he taught me a lot. So I have his kind of science chemistry brain, and so which kind of helps with this documentary because there's a lot of science behind it. You know,
right.
Connect the dots so that, you know, everybody can kind of understand it. And, you know, and that's the masking of a lot of science is that, you know, they like to use, you know, big terms and kind of disconnect it so you can't put it together. And, you know, the propaganda is pretty funny. But, you know, it is really, when you break it down, it is, you know, it can be very simple. And so, anyways, long story is that I, you know, growing up that way, I grew up with a grandfather making things. We built houses, tree houses. We built my own go-kart and we built the engine and built the frame and all that. So I learned just very early on how to analyze things and make things. So that's kind of been my trajectory. And so, I love the challenge. So when I got into sustainability and fashion, it was just like, okay, here's the limitations, but why? Let's push this a little bit more. Let me travel to Morocco, look at the cactus silk and, you know, try to figure out, you know, obviously they used to do everything with natural fibers and natural dyes. Right. And so I studied Florence on the plant-based dyes and what they use there. And then everyone can look locally in their own farms and see what they can pull from their own backwoods and use for that. So it's about figuring out the mordants and the temperatures and the type of water, the type of pans you use. I mean, there's a lot of variables. So it is kind of chemistry. I mean, it is chemistry. So, but chemistry for good, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, what I find really fascinating is I think that anybody that has this really strong fashion identity, I think I would probably say 99.9% of people have a grandparent's story. You know, like my grandmother taught me to do this. I saw my mum and my grandma doing that. I love that so much.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. In New Zealand, we were there filming. One of the local Maori guys, he basically said, which I didn't realize it, but they are raised by their grandparents. Like the parents hand them over to their grandparents to be raised for culture, tradition. They study the wool and how to use that in the bush. It's very interesting. So I think there's some wisdom to that. But I honestly think as far as my design aesthetic, it just comes from home, from being raised on a farm and being an equestrian. And I view, you know, and I talk about this a lot. I've been in the industry a long time, but I've, you know, in my circle, I'm one of few straight male designers that I know. I think that also changes the way I view women and how I design for them. I'm a romantic at heart. So like I love the, you know, the collarbone or the back of the neck. I think that's one of the sexiest part of a lady. And so I like to accentuate that. I don't really like to, I don't sexualize women in that way. So I don't really like to do, even though I did some sheer fabrics this past collection, but that was the point was like, you know, hey, we need to talk about this, you know. And so I've never, you know, all my shows, none of the ladies wear bras for the modeling because they're always synthetic bras that they're wearing and things like that. So, I've hold true to that, style. I like the Renaissance, the romance, you know, a lot of people say I do time period. I love tradition and I've worked with, you know, for example, Scotland, and I went all around Scotland looking at the textile mills that they still have in existence. Make beautiful lace and beautiful linen and beautiful wool, obviously. And so I pulled from that and worked with the historic environment in Scotland, created a Women of the Crown collection that we showed at Edinburgh Castle, which was amazing. First catwalk ever there. And that was a great honor to do that and just kind of highlight these textilers that are still there. And I created like little cuffs and we put it in the retail store of Edinburgh Castle, just kind of get them to think of different solutions, smaller things that were still affordable, but made of the fabric. Cause obviously we do things out of natural fabric and handmade, and it costs more to make. So yeah. So things like that. So I don't think I'll ever deviate from that. I don't see myself, well, I'm never going to use synthetics. So I don't see me doing a polyester crop top, you know, going down
right.
The road.
With all these different places that you've shown, I'm curious, is there a different atmosphere, a different vibe in different cities?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've never been one a fan of showing my catwalks in a tent, or I like to go into the heart of a city. My show at Paris Fashion Week, I've only done one time. I did at Chateau Fontainebleau, which is the it was the fox hunting castle of Louis XV, I believe. Hopefully, I got that right. And he, obviously built Versailles, but had that. So it was basically built for horses. So the stairs are wider, so you can literally run a horse up it, which was awesome. So I did the show there at a horse parked out front, had torches lit up, and had a my friend who played Little Mermaid in LA, she came out and was the mermaid in the fountain, which was awesome. And she had a little silicone tail that was flapping around. I was like, I don't think this fountain's been cleaned since, that there, and she's like, no, I love it, because she's such a historian. She's like, I'm loving it. So we had the cocktail there, and then everyone came to the ballroom, which is the original flooring was there. And to me, that just, I love that authenticness and that, that realness. Again, I like being grounded, and so that was an amazing show. And Chateau Fontainebleau was, they partnered with us, so it was amazing to do that with them. And yeah, so.
Incredible. I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the exact opposite of being grounded would have to be styling for Hollywood.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't, to be fair, I don't do a lot of styling. I basically, it's funny, and the business of styling has changed a lot, and now stylists are getting paid, though, by the designers to place gowns upon their. I think it's very interesting. I'm like, wait, you're getting paid by the celeb to do their styling, then you go to the designer and say, hey, I want money to be able to place this on them. And I'm like, huh, such a game. So I've never played that game. I've never bought advertisement in Vogue. And like, we got best dressed in Vogue one year, which was great for the Oscars. But the only reason, I think, is because my dear friend Esperanza Spalding, who lives in Nashville, she came to me and said, I'm doing this. She was singing for it, which was great. And she's this beautiful African American with this beautiful, hair. And we just. And she's super sweet, amazing artist. And so we put her in this gown, it's white, and I put seashells on it, and it was this white hemp silk gown. It was just beautiful, like angelic. So anyway, so and then that was what she wore for the performance, and then for the red carpet, we had her in this indigo dyed hemp silk, and it was just stunning. She just looked. And I was lucky. They shot it, and they put it in the top 10 of the Oscars that year on the red carpet, which was an honor because everyone else that was on that list, bought advertisement in Vogue. So you never know, so yeah, I don't really play that game of styling in Hollywood. I guess dress my friends when they need it. We're a small design. I'm a small designer, so I don't have the means or the marketing dollars to do that. But my PR has been with me since well, not the very beginning, but near the beginning. Pop PR and their friends, and they, believe in what we're doing, and that's great. So yeah, so we have a little showroom in LA, and so a lot of stylists pull from that as well, which is great. And but I love it when stylists come to me and say, hey, we really need this. We're looking for this. Can you make something? I'm like, well, yeah, sure, I can. That's what I do. So that's fun. So that's how I look at it. I look at it more of an art form than a product placement. Because I, to be fair, I don't really like, my goal isn't to sell, which sounds strange in my, my accountant would probably kill me right now. But, I do it for purpose. I'm really trying to get people in these clothes so that they can feel it, touch it, and know the difference. And then obviously help the industry shift it and give them solutions and inspiration. Give consumers inspiration and say, hey, it looks great and it smells great and it doesn't hold smells when you work out in the gym. I mean, good grief. Polyester just stinks. I can't, you know, I go to the gym in my hemp riding pants. Everyone makes fun of me. And I'm, you know, I'm wearing like, you know, it's just I in my hemp t-shirt and I work out and I just, I honestly don't have to wash it. I just, because it doesn't hold smell. And that's the beauty of natural fibers versus the synthetic. But, you know, people love the synthetic because of the stretch and it forms to their body. It makes them feel like they're healthier. But instead, it's putting a lot of chemicals into their system. And I always look at it like it's kind of like smoking and working out at the same time. Really counterproductive. So anyways, that's more of this is what you'll find in the doc and in the science.
For sure.
And so I'm excited to see what kind of change it brings. And so that's why I'm doing it. So I'm trying to hold on until I get this out and then maybe I'll retire in the woods with my horse somewhere.
Well, what an image. I mean, I was about to ask you if you have anything else coming up alongside the documentary.
Well, I am doing a book for the first time.
Wow.
I have a co-author, Randall Fitzgerald, who wrote 100 Year Lie about you know, chemicals kind of hiding in our everyday products. And so great researcher. So we asked him to do it. You know, it's kind of like when I asked my buddy from Def Leppard to play my first show in London and he said yes. And I didn't really mean it. I was kind of joking. Yes. And he did. And it was just amazing. And then same thing happened with Randall. I was like, okay, we're doing this. And so yeah, we have a like 120 page kind of, I call it a more of a handbook manual, there's only so much you can put in a doc, and I wanted it to be entertaining as well, not just heavy and the science of it, but I wanted it to be there so that you know, people could reference it and really find out the answers and not have to take my word for it or whoever's talking in the doc take their word for it, but they could actually. You know, and again, when you go on internet and research, or, you know, we did extensive research, you know, he did about 2 years worth, I did about 20 years worth and put it together. So it's you know, it's very well defined and organized. So it makes it easy access. And that was the goal, so that, you know, people can really understand it, because there's, and it, you got to imagine there's a whole industry out there that doesn't want any of this to be known. Yeah, it's true. And so they have a lot more money than we do. So they'll counter it, and they have PR on their staff and they'll try to counter it as well. And so, so that's why I wanted it out there. So it's going to be really at the same time, but yeah, as far as, so that's awesome. But as far as creatively, I'm doing a new collection that will show in September at the launch of this in London.
Fantastic.
And I'm doing a show in Turkey, of all places, this summer. I've been asked to do, so I'm excited about that. That's a new place I've never been, and to everywhere I go, I try to like engage with the local community and find out what they die with or what they have in the past, and kind of play with it. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah. Wow. I have to ask you now, because you mentioned you were a reader earlier as well, and now that I know you're also writing a book. What are your favorite books?
Interesting. So my top, my hippie dad turned me on to it years ago. It was written in the 70s, and it's called The Handbook for Higher Consciousness.
Mm.
Out of print, but you can find some old, you know, old prints still in existence. But it is, you know, about 150 pages, and it's just an easy read. And every chapter is kind of like a meditational chapter, basically. And the gist of it, not to give anything away, because anyone's listening wants to read it, it simply it turns you know, like, not addictions, yeah, I guess it turns addictions into preferences. So the idea is that, you know, like say you're a coffee drinker and tomorrow all the coffee shops are closed and you don't have coffee at your house and all the groceries are closed. You don't have your coffee, you can be like, well, I prefer to have a coffee to start my day. But, you know, so it's the whole kind of process is old, the kind of hippie wisdom is like, okay, if you turn that into preferences, you have no fear. You have control factors. You can literally flow every day. And it's not like happy-go-lucky, but it's like nothing will engage you and take you off track, and it will also allow you just to be open to how things flow and be more internal with your gut and make better decisions because you're not trapped by these kind of external addictions. And, you know, and it plays into fashion as well, because we are addicted to cheap price points and fast fashion, as everyone talks about. But it truly is an addiction, because it's hard. You know, I even ran into a lady today in Malibu who was working out at the gym I was working out in. And she said, "I love what you're doing, da-da-da." And I'm sitting there looking at her. She's wearing, you know, spandex, quickly dyed black. And they were smelling. They were outgassing. I didn't tell her that. I didn't want to hurt her feelings. But she knows about those because she's heard, you know, listen to my TED Talks. But she's like, it's hard because people are addicted to how something maybe looks or makes them feel, or an emotional attachment to a garment. Right. And but unfortunately, if it's made with these chemicals, it's going to be harmful to the body. And so that's the hardship we're up against. It's not just education. It's not just, you know, me talking about it or the book or reading this or hearing this podcast. It really is kind of breaking that and say, okay, I love this favorite t-shirt. You know, I went to prom, you know, party in college, but, you know, it's like, I gotta go, you know, because it's sitting there off gas, Lysol ink, which has PFABs in it, and it's made of polyester. You don't want that near your baby, you know, time to move forward. And so that's my favorite book, because it really set me up in life. And my hippie dad was my mentor, and really he lived that way, as I try to live every day. And that's just it. So, yeah.
Incredible. I think I might just have to check that one out.
Yeah, it hopefully, yeah, let me know how it goes. But it's changed a lot of my friends' lives. Yeah.
For sure. All right. So final question then. Where can people find you, follow you, and see all these incredible things that you have coming up?
Yeah, so we actually just launched our website for the doc called letthembenaked.com. So sorry, my Tennessee draw, but it's, you know, it's naked. we'll kind of keep everyone updated on that, because we're going to film festivals and we'll announce where we're going, and then we'll be showing it to public with the right streamer. And that alignment happens, and we'll announce that and when it takes off. So same with the book and the publishing. So yeah, so as we're right, you know, we're right in the midst of it now. So it's kind of exciting to talk about. So it's been a year in the progress. So I'm excited to finally get it out there, because we are actually racing against, everyone says you did it so quickly. I'm like, yeah, you know, because there's some counter docs coming out, so we got to get it out first. You know, with misinformation, it's I won't name the name now, but you'll find it in the doc, but there's one bra company that they got sued by 600 women for breast cancer, and anyways, the way they PR'd it was saying it was the underwire and the bra, and you know, obviously metal is a conduit of radiation, and so maybe if you have your phone near it, whatever. But what it did, it allowed them to take the attention off what could be the cause, which is the fabrication dies, and took the pressure off. And so they just replaced the underwire of metal with the underwire of plastic. And so they didn't have to change their production, didn't have to change their anything. So, you know, so that's why I don't want to say too much, but it's going to be really shocking that this hasn't been spoken about. So, yeah, so if you don't hear from me ever again, you'll know what happened. And, you know, it's funny. Even my producer's like, you may want to say on the video, on the doc, that, you know, I have never had any suicidal thoughts. And, you know, kind of funny. I'm like, guys, I got this. It's cool. But luckily, my uncle ran the ATF. And so I got a lot of family in government. So hopefully I'm well protected. We'll see.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know if you ever saw The Bodyguard, but that was based on my uncle, funny enough.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was a G-man, protected the president, so was my grandfather and great-grandfather, so I have the old pocket watch, so I have a lot of protectors in my line, lineage, so it's kind of cool.
That is pretty. That's going to be useful too.
I hope so. I hope so. So, but yeah, thank you for having me, and yeah, thanks for talking about it, and I hope your listeners yeah, get something from this for sure.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, let me know how the book goes, and yeah, we'll see you hopefully this fall. We'll make sure you know about the when it launches.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. All right. See you, darling.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode of London Runway Style was presented by me, Chief Editor Rhiannon de Vergue. You can find full issues as well as interviews, articles, trend reports, and more at londonrunway.co.uk. And follow us at London Runway Mag on most social media channels. Until next time, enjoy.